Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Domestic abuse is always bad news, and some would say, some have said, that the way to avoid it is simply to avoid the domestic part, that is, the traditional family, husband, wife, children. After all, isn't that the breeding ground for this kind of thing? The truth, statistically, is actually quite different from that. Joining us to talk about intact marriages and domestic abuse, Dr. Brad Wilcox. He's director of the Home Economics Project at the American Enterprise Institute and the Institute for Family Studies, and he's authored a recent column for The Federalist titled, Yes, Women and Children Are Safer Within Intact Marriages. Dr. Wilcox, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here today.
You wrote a piece back in June for The Washington Post on marriage and domestic violence. What did you say in that piece, and what was the general reaction?
Well, my co-author Robin Wilson and I, who teaches family law at the University of Illinois, said that basically girls and women are generally safer within the shelter of an intact married household. And the initial publication of that, the Washington Post website, had a kind of an offensive headline, which we hadn't approved or seen, basically saying that women needed to get married. And, you know, that elicited a lot of negative and understandably negative commentary. But there also were a lot of women and some men writing after the publication who were kind of just questioning the thesis that marriage itself offered any kind of protection to women and kids. And I think oftentimes because they had a bad experience, either being raised in a family where there's some kind of violence but was an intact, you know, married family, or because they'd been, you know, mistreated by a, you know, previous husband. So there's often a kind of a personal angle to this that explains people's negative response to this kind of argument.
Mona Chalabi criticized the Washington Post piece, saying that you didn't take factors like education, income, race into account. But with those things even taken into account, does marriage still play a significant role in this?
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting was that, you know, I think a lot of people were, you know, offended that we would look at just the link between marriage and rates of domestic violence, for instance, and, you know, without controlling for, you know, for education, race, and poverty, because those are all factors that are linked to domestic violence. The irony, of course, is they don't object to, you know, looking at these issues in a kind of pivot way on other outcomes like incarceration or whatnot. But in any case, this new research shows that even when you control for income, for maternal education, and for race, that kids who are in intact married households are much less likely to witness any kind of domestic violence, and also that it's the most powerful predictor of kids being exposed to domestic violence. That is that basically, you know, when you look at what predicts, you know, this marital status of parents, income of parents, race, ethnicity of parents, marriage is the best factor in predicting a safe home for kids in America.
Do we know why, Dr. Wilcox, do we know why that marriage continues to appear to be a constant in protection against domestic violence?
Well, I think that there are a couple of things that marriage does, on average, right, typically. One is it's associated with more commitment, with more fidelity, and we know that sexual jealousy is a big source of domestic violence. Having that, you know, commitment and fidelity there more often than not is, you know, is a protective factor. It's associated with less instability, having, you know, different adults in the household, and that's also a risk factor for violence and abuse. And it's associated with more stability in terms of, or higher income, also a protective factor. So it's linked to a number of things that tend to promote a safer and more secure family environment for kids and for women as well.
Why do you think the reaction is so strong, not only simply to the statistics, but to the simple idea that marriage may play a positive role in preventing domestic abuse or protecting from domestic abuse?
Well, I think, you know, as I said before, part of the reason is that some people, women in particular, have had, you know, bad experiences in their own intact family of origin or have had bad relationships or bad marriages. And I think that's part and parcel of the problem. I think it's also the case that there are lots of young women out there, judging by my Twitter feed when that thing was published, who don't feel like there's a good marital prospect in their lives. And so to suggest that marriage might be an answer to a, you know, a central problem in our society seems to them antiquarian or offensive or something else, just because they don't see marriage as a real live option for them in their near future. And so to suggest it as a kind of a solution to any kind of major social problem seems to them, unfair and ill-advised.
But if the statistics are true, doesn't that, in essence, set up kind of a reinforcing cycle, a self-fulfilling prophecy, that women who might avoid marriage because they have come from the exceptional case would in fact be at least potentially setting themselves up for more exposure to that kind of violence?
Yeah, and that's right. That's the irony, that we have a situation where, you know, I think some women, and understandably or are not understandably reluctant to get married or stay married, but what they don't sort of realize or recognize is that when you take that trend, you know, in the aggregate and have lots of, for instance, single parent households in a given community, you see more violence happening, both in the streets, there's more criminal activity. And it looks like, based upon this new research published in Family Studies on Monday, in the home as well. And so the challenge is, can we create a better culture that makes marriage more accessible and more attractive to men and to women, and sort of increase the number of married families in the U.S. and the number of communities where married families are more common than, for instance, single-parent families or cohabiting families?
What role, then, does education, race, economic status, what roles do they play? How would you set them in the perspective of your general point here?
Well, we do know, for instance, that high levels of unemployment, that lower incomes, that less education are all associated with more domestic violence. It's partly because there's often more stress and strain, you know, in those families, in those households, in those neighborhoods, and those things all tend to then make people more likely to resort to domestic violence. So they also, of course, reduce the odds of people getting married in the first place and remaining married in the second place. So I think from a progressive vantage point, the solution here to all this is to encourage public policies that increase the economic stability and the economic resources of lower-income individuals and families. And that certainly might help. I think we have to recognize, too, that marriage has an independent role in fostering, on average, more stable and secure home environments for our kids and for women as well.
Dr. Brad Wilcox is our guest. He's director of the Home Economics Project at the American Enterprise Institute and the Institute for Family Studies, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, Yes, Women and Children Are Safer Within Intact Marriages. We're talking about intact marriages and domestic abuse, and our conversation with him will continue on the other side of the break. Then Dr. Albert Moeller will be our guest. We'll talk about that Newsweek cover story on the Bible.
Solid, serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. the 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Wednesday afternoon, January the 7th, we're continuing our conversation with Dr. Brad Wilcox of the American Enterprise Institute on intact marriages and domestic abuse a little bit later. Dr. Albert Moeller will join us. We'll talk with him and get his reaction to a Newsweek magazine cover story on the Bible. Brad, I'm curious about, we've talked here about intact marriages in general. What about the ease with which marriages can be dissolved, especially in the last 50 years, and no-fault divorce? What role would you say that plays in this entire issue?
Well, you know, it's a complicated question that you ask, because it is the case that changes in divorce law in the 70s actually reduced the number of homicides for women, for spouses, because women who were in abusive relationships could get out more readily. So that's an important point to acknowledge here. But it's also the case that the sort of bigger retreat from marriage and the increase in single parenthood and family instability and cohabitation that we've seen since then has, you know, contributed to elevated risk for people who, and for, you know, kids who are in those households. And so I think we have to figure out ways that we can, you know, as I said before, to sort of strengthen marriage, make people's faith in marriage stronger, and make marriage a more realistic option, particularly for working-class poor Americans who today are much less likely to get and stay married than their college-educated peers.
What role would you say the, for lack of a better word, kind of the redefinition of marriage, the expanding definition of marriage, will play in this issue? As what are we talking about as of yesterday with Florida, the 37th state, to expand the definition of marriage?
You know, that's a great question, but I have no idea how that issue is going to play out on this particular outcome. I think that's, you know, that's something that we'll see in the next decade or so. But right now, we just don't have, you know, enough good scientific research to make any kind of judgment about that question.
So, what is the bottom line? What is the best possible situation, all other factors being equal, that parents and children can find themselves in, in order to be safest from the potential for domestic abuse?
An intact marriage where, you know, both husband and wife have a history with one another and with their kids, a sense of their shared future, and some measure of, you know, economic and social and emotional stability. And of course, it's important to acknowledge here that it's not just sort of being an intact marriage that matters. It's being in a, you know, in a healthy marriage where, you know, husband and wife are respectful to one another and towards their kids, where, you know, conflict is handled in a constructive manner, and where people, you know, are affectionate and forgiving and respectful. So, it, you know, but that if you have kind of an intact, decent quality marriage, that's the safest place for kids and for women in America.
How would you respond to someone who says that's a pipe dream, that's not possible, that may be something that could have happened in the past but no longer today? How would you respond?
Well, what I would say is that it's, you know, it's still the case that most kids are in married homes today, that most kids are born into married homes today. Most Americans aspire to marriage, and especially that our elites, that college-educated Americans, are, you know, overwhelmingly likely to get and stay married when they have kids. So marriage is a real is a real life institution. The question is, are we going to make sure that the sort of protections that marriage extends on average to women and kids are, you know, left not just as the preserve of the educated and the affluent, but also working class and poor Americans who, up until very recently, you know, did have, you know, access in a sense, or did make use of marriage in much the same way as their better educated and more affluent fellow citizens.
Dr. Brad Wilcox is director of the Home Economics Project at the American Enterprise Institute and the Institute for Family Studies. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "Yes, Women and Children Are Safer Within Intact Marriages." You'll find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Wilcox, thank you very much for your time again.
It's great to be here today. Thanks for having me on.
When we come back on this Wednesday afternoon, you might have seen Newsweek's cover story on the Bible. And if your hopes were up that maybe it might be a regular old journalistic coverage of the Bible as a book of influence and of history in Christianity and in the world, you might have found it a bit disappointing. Dr. Albert Moeller, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, will join us on the other side of the break. We'll get his thoughts on that Newsweek magazine cover story on the Bible.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Are you concerned about weight gain during the holidays? Work out this winter at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois. Arch Fitness offers adult boot camps on weekday evenings and on weekday and Saturday mornings. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Win the war against winter weight. Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
We talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took five loaves and two fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity, Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues, Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.